Today on LSE Share Talk, this podcast, we have Robert Price, the CEO of Islands Natural Resources. We also have Paul Mendel, and we have another colleague with him called Collie. We're going to cover as much as we can today regarding the recent hive of activity that's been going on at H&R. Hello and welcome back, Robert and the team.
Well, it's a pleasure, Peter, to be here on LSE Share Talk, and we truly appreciate the work that you do in allowing us to get our message out on Share Talk.
You're most welcome, Robert. I mean, I'm looking at the different RNSs and transactions that have happened this week, including the RNS on your annual results. And given the volume of traffic and, as I call it, noise regarding H&R, there's lots of queries out there at the moment regarding retail investors as to exactly what's going on with H&R. So I really appreciate you guys coming back to clear some things up.
Thank you.
Okay. First point of call, really, is that the main question that investors are asking is regarding, obviously, the and they're seeking clarity on Diversion's sale of warrants to an institutional investor. Could you just give some clarity on what happened there and the benefits for H&R?
Yes, the main motivation behind selling the warrants to an institutional investor was a way to raise money for Highlands. We have so many opportunities, and those opportunities require cash. So the arrangement that we entered into is we sold the Diversion warrants. There's three different tranches of them. There's the first, second, and third. The first one will allow us to raise 2.5 million pounds into Highlands. And then the second and third tranche will be the same thing. We're very hopeful that those other two tranches will close as well.
Yep.
And so that'll give us the resources, the funds to go after these opportunities, particularly the DT Ultravert opportunities.
Okay. So given that you've got essentially the opportunity coming over the next X of months to have essentially a 7.5 million pound fundraise to enable you to develop other assets, that institutional investor, does that provide you with an opportunity to rebalance the capital structure? This institution is going to be a cornerstone investor in H&R?
That's exactly what we're doing. We are restructuring it. Peter, when we originally purchased the technology from Diversion Technologies, our share price was in the 10 pence range.
Yes.
And so we purchased the technology for warrants that were way out of the money back then. And so we had those 30 million warrants, and they refer to it as an overhang in the in the market.
Indeed, yeah.
And so the fact that we're raising the 7.5 million pounds, you're right. We are restructuring the overall capital structure.
Okay. So will that provide, in a term, liquidity then? Will the spreads on the share price be reduced? Will they be more accessible for individual investors?
Yeah, that's our hope. Well, there has not been as much float in our stock, and so we're hopeful that there'll be a little bit more float, and I think it will cause more opportunities for more investors to come in.
Okay, so speaking as a private investor and listening to what has been said via various chat rooms and other people saying various things, what were the alternatives to Diversion seeking this warrant sale? And what would have been the consequences of these alternatives to what they've done?
Oh, as far as alternatives, we thought this was the best course of action.
Yeah.
Again, our motivation, Peter, was to make sure that we had Highlands be as strong as we could be. And with 7.5 million pounds, it truly makes us very strong as we move forward to capitalize on DT Ultravert and the other opportunities we have coming down the road.
Yeah. Okay. So can you, talking with regards to DT Ultravert, could we now speak about that technology and the companies that are involved with it and the long-term prospects for that then?
Well, Peter, our overall philosophy here at Highlands is we want to take advantage of the downturn in oil and gas prices. And what goes along with that is being able to purchase technologies that can make oil and gas wells profitable at current prices. Now, DT Ultravert, we have filed up to 18 patents on various processes, primarily using the process of gas as a diverting agent.
Yeah.
We signed the indicative terms with Schlumberger,
yeah,
where Schlumberger provides us a royalty for each refract that they do. We work with Schlumberger day in and day out. And one of our one of the main champions at Schlumberger, his name is Domingo Mata. Domingo Mata is, in my opinion, an extraordinary scientist.
Yeah.
He ran one of their international consulting group divisions. And he worked with us in marketing DT Ultravert with various oil and gas companies. He believes in DT Ultravert. And he was offered, I don't know if I should get too personal on it, but he was offered a position to run another group within Schlumberger.
Yeah.
And it was a big promotion. And he chose to come with us.
Yeah, I saw he that. Yeah, extremely good, extremely experienced person. Yeah.
Yeah, he chose to see DT Ultravert be commercialized. And we he had various calls from very many high up people within Schlumberger that tried to bring him back. And we're just so honored that he's going to join us. And he was a champion within Schlumberger. And now he's going to be our champion day in and day out as we market DT Ultravert. And let me speak a little bit about what we have going on in the Piceance Basin.
Yeah.
And what we have learned in dealing with a multinational, multi-billion dollar corporation, things don't happen overnight. It actually took us quite a while to sign the agreement with Schlumberger. And it's taken a while to get the fracs off, but Schlumberger is funding 100% of these refracs on the first five wells. I'm going to repeat that one more time, Peter.
Yeah.
Schlumberger is funding 100% on these refracs. Highlands does not have any capital expenditure. The good news is Highlands will get a royalty interest on every one of the refracs. So, we're starting slow, Peter.
Yeah,
but we're slowly capitalizing on our DT Ultravert business model of no CapEx with in earning the royalty income. Now, Peter, I say that with an exception. We are seeing so many extraordinary opportunities where DT Ultravert might be able to work. Now, how it will work, or what our process in showing how it'll work, is through a candidate selection process. We pick wells that have very good rock, very good probability of success. And so we're still, some of the use of this new $7.5 million, we are going to accelerate the development of the technology. And having Domingo Mata at the head of that process is going to be, in my opinion, extraordinary.
Yeah, that I understand that fully. I was going to ask that really, because one of the concerns raised by private individuals is that the current outflow of cash and the current cash burn, and that seems to have gone up over the last couple of months. And with regards to the 2.5 coming in the first tranche, is how long that's at the rate that you're going now, that first 2.5 will last you as a CapEx going forward.
Oh, Peter, it puts us in a sound footing for many, many years down the road.
Right. Okay.
And so when we have the royalty interest coming in, and we use some of the proceeds to refract wells, then we add an additional income stream coming into Highlands.
Yeah.
And then we just signed a transaction with Opera. Opera is a London based standard list shell.
Yeah.
To put the helium assets into. One of the advantages of that transaction is Opera will pay Highlands 20,000 pounds per month to manage that project in the early phases of it. So we're slowly building, but yeah, we're building this value and this mm-hmm. revenue stream to make Highlands strong over a long period of time.
Okay, so with that Opera transaction, you're getting 20,000 pounds per month. Going forward then, how does that increase, and what are the terms of that arrangement with regards to productivity of those assets?
Well, our goal at Highlands is to create shareholder value.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
Of course, Peter, you can do that through the drill bit, through refracking,
yeah,
through collecting royalties on the DT Ultravert stream.
Yes.
But you can also create that value by owning shares in another company.
Yeah.
Right now, there is no publicly traded helium company. And I would like Coley and Paul to speak a little bit about the scarcity of helium.
Yeah.
And then I would like to come back, Peter, about our CPR, our competent persons report,
yeah,
that we commissioned with RPS on the acreage that we have just purchased in the state of Montana. We will be, that report will be forthcoming. We'll release it to the market.
Yeah.
Our internal analysis shows that it could be very significant, but we wanted to, before we release anything to the market, we wanted to make sure that we had a competent person's report. So Paul and Coley, could you please take a few moments to talk about the overall helium market in your opinion?
Coley is well-suited to understand the helium market. Coley, why don't you take us through it?
Sure. The helium market, particularly in the U.S., is an interesting history. Maybe the full history is outside the scope of this conversation. But initially, the helium market was dominated by the United States government. And in 1925, Congress enacted legislation that allowed the government to begin storing helium in a strategic reserve in Texas. And up until 1996, a large amount of helium was stored in that field called Cliffside. It was up to 30 billion cubic feet of helium.
Okay.
In 1996, the government began privatizing the helium, which eventually began leading to scarcity as helium reserves were drawn down, prices began to escalate. And since in the last 15 years, since year 2000, price of helium for crude helium posted on the Bureau of Land Management website has gone from $49.50 per MCF to now over $100 per MCF. And that's really a result of the drawdowns of the government's strategic reserve. And it's important to note just how significant the government supply is domestically and also internationally. As recently as 2014, the government was supplying 30% of the world's helium supply. And conversely, it's expected that that strategic reserve is going to be depleted within as soon as 5 years. And so as the price continues to escalate and market concerns sort of rise around scarcity, specifically in the United States, but also internationally, it's a time when helium's becoming a very scarce and valuable asset, and it's a good time for Highlands to be exploring for and identifying and developing helium reserves.
And so what we're doing with Opera is we're helping them build an infrastructure for exploiting this helium play in Montana. So yeah, we'll move forward with that. But again, the CPR will be forthcoming, and there's a helium component and a methane component. It's something that we're really excited about. And the reason we spun that asset out is not only to create shareholder value for Highland shareholders, but also we're focused on DT Ultravert. We're focused on moving that technology forward. We think it's important to have the helium project in a separate entity, but we are just as excited about the helium project moving forward as we are the DT Ultravert.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of research on the helium bit when I was prior to speaking to you, and I was looking at the what they call the passage, the Helium Stewardship Act that was passed in 2013. Now, given that the United States produces 70% of the world's helium, yeah, there's obviously going to be a shortfall unless more helium is found and stored. So is that what you guys are going for in Montana and seeking other assets?
Absolutely. This could be a very significant supply of helium. As the area that Cully referred to, the BLM project, is in Texas, goes into Kansas and Oklahoma, and is the Hugoton field. We have the same concentration of helium in the methane gas.
Right.
So it could be significant. The lease program has progressed very well. We're continuing to pull together other leases that, of course, OPRA will take and move forward with. But the helium is very exciting.
Okay. I've seen the projections, and obviously the price is going to be sorted out by the government as such. And I take it they're going to take a great interest in what you guys do, and obviously potentially help you at some stage with what your plans are regarding that, given it's a scarce resource.
And Peter, I think Paul has an additional comment to share.
Yeah, if I just may, it might be helpful to give some perspective on other helium resources in the world. As you said, the U.S. has been it's been a dominant force in the market since the 20s.
Yeah.
There are other world supplies, namely Qatar, that are coming on. But I want to mention that with respect to domestic supplies, which is an important political aspect to buyers of helium, which are a great many buyers that are located in the United States, they want a U.S. supply.
Of course.
And Qatar, it is in a sensitive part of the world. These producers and marketers of helium would really like to see a U.S. supply to potentially replace the existing supplies. And we believe that this part of Montana could, in fact, be a significant supply source over the coming decades of helium in the United States.
Okay, so you, using the technologies that you have in place, do you have a time frame where you could be producing from Montana?
Oh goodness, we've put everything in place and we've placed it in OPRA's hands. Again, we will own 55% of OPRA.
Yeah.
I would suspect that logistically, there could be the first well drilled within the next 6 months.
Okay.
And again, Peter, the CPR will be forthcoming.
Okay. All right. So with so much going on with HNR and Schlumberger's arrangements with yourselves and getting Dominic Montana, which is a massive coup on your part, I believe, the team's part. What should investors who, having rode the price up beyond 70 pence, and today we're now back down below 30 pence, what can be said regarding the technology that will reassure investors that this is a long-term story and the share price needn't be this volatile? And given 2017, 2018, H&R will be in a far better place and the share price will be far higher.
Oh, Peter, that's a very good question. And we're doing this for the long term.
Yeah.
We're not in it for the next week, the next month, the next quarter. We're doing this for the long term. And will there be volatility? You bet.
Yeah.
But Highland's strategy is to create a steady revenue stream through royalties, through stock in other companies, including the OPRA transaction, through refracking of really good candidates. And so I believe that the market will see, as the revenues start to increase, as the rollout of DTL Trevert continues, the revenues on royalties will increase. And I want to quote Domingo Mata when he was at Schlumberger, and he'll be with us on Monday morning. We have so many different meetings with E&P companies, but when he was at Schlumberger and we were entering into these different agreements with exploration and production companies, I asked him, I said, Domingo, what do you think is going to happen with DT Ultravert? And he calls me Rob. My name's Robert, but he calls me Rob.
Yeah.
And he said, Rob, we're at a tipping point. We're at a tipping point on the technology.
Well, that's,
and if I could say, Peter, this is Paul. I am the inventor of DT Ultravert.
Yeah, we spoke last time. I appreciate you coming back.
Thank you. I believe in this technology with all my heart and all my mind, and I want people to know that.
Yeah.
No, I think they get that. And also, I've read through quite a few reports, and if I'm correct, and I hope I am correct, Robert, that you haven't sold any warrants or any shares since the company IPO'd. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I'm not sure any of my warrants or shares.
So that just reiterates your long-term view of the company, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I wanted to touch on the fact that you've got, and you keep reiterating that you've got over 20 prospective candidates for the refract treatments. Is there going to be a stage where you're going to divulge who these potential candidates are so people know that you're involved with quite some large entities? Because that would, again, reaffirm people's view.
Absolutely. There are some sensitive matters. There are confidentiality agreements.
Yeah.
With some of these companies. And Peter, the reason it's sensitive is DT Ultravert success could give some of these exploration and production companies a competitive advantage. The reason Schlumberger signed up with us is they wanted exclusive rights. Now, they allowed Liberty to have some of those rights, and we're actually making a specific request to expand some of their rights. Because they want to proceed forward in Canada as well, and so that as those new agreements are signed and move forward, we certainly will disclose them to the market. The one that is very close, and we have disclosed this, is Great Western.
Yes,
it's a company here in Denver that's in the DJ Basin, Denver Julesburg Basin,
mm-hmm.
And they have offered up 5 wells, up to 30 wells, for refract. So we'll continue to, announce those to market as they come closer to consummation.
Okay. So I'm seeing this as obviously a long-term story. And I think sometimes, as you've stated earlier, that some investors can be quite short-termist or get very alarmed sometimes when this information put out there or RNS put out there that they don't quite understand, hence the share price fall. So if we're looking at the long term, which investors, majority of the investors should be looking long term, and you're looking long term having not sold any shares or warrants, the question therein lies, when, and the one that investors are asking, when will H&R become cash flow positive? When will the cash burn cease?
Well, let me say this, Peter.
Yeah.
With the raise of 7.5 million pounds, that is certainly very significant.
Very significant.
But again, I'd like to speak to the Schlumberger royalty.
Yeah.
On these first wells that are coming in.
Yeah.
The offer transaction, the 20,000 pounds.
Yeah.
These refrac opportunities that we may spend a little money ourselves with the raise.
Yes.
Those will create revenue. So even though we're in it for the long term, the revenue is being created today.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So as far as cash flow positive, we're getting real close to that, Peter. So there is a long term, you bet. And that's why we're doing it. The shorts is here today.
No, that's commendable. I like the fact that you've diversified and got so many, irons in the fire, as they say. So it's really good that you've put a fantastic team in place, and the government actually needs you to be sorting out and helping them with the helium story as well. So I just wanted to get Paul, if possible, please, to just cover for the investors, because I think last time we didn't get quite a full understanding of the DTV Ultravert technology. So just before we close, I just wanted Paul to go over that. In layman's terms, so people fully understand what's going on and why this technology is so important and the potential for it, please.
Sure. I'd love to. So just a little background. Refracking has been tried and proven successful in vertical wells, particularly in a field that I built two operating companies back in the 90s, And that's a field called the Wattenberg Field in Colorado. So refracking was a very successful, very profitable operation for the operators there. In fact, Anadarko made a very good living for very many years just refracking their, thousands. I don't know if it was 3,000 or 4,000 wells. And then once those opportunities were exhausted in the late 90s, refracking kind of took a back seat. Then, of course, we had the shale revolution starting in 2006, where we drilled horizontal wells with multiple stage fracking. That persisted until the oil price collapse in, what was it, late 2014. So industry has been trying to find other ways to make money other than drilling new expensive shale wells. And one of those ways, which they remembered from vertical days, was refracking. So they tried to refrack. I think there's about 100, maybe 125 attempts by the industry to refrack these horizontal wells. It hasn't been nearly as successful or consistent as vertical well refracking campaigns were back in the 90s. And there's some technical reasons for that. There's some debate over exactly what the technical reasons, which one is really the culprit, or if it's a series of problems. But all that matters is it's not consistent. And if it's not consistent, the industry isn't going to spend billions of dollars of capital pursuing something they can't define returns by.
Of course.
So what happened was the industry basically challenged the two major service companies in the industry, which is one's called Halliburton, one's called Schlumberger. And these are leading companies, leading edge companies, and they have research departments and good science, good technical people. And their solution has been developing what we call diverters. And a diverter is a, well, it has been until DTL divert, it has been a solid form. They're basically polymers or fibers. The idea is to pump these fibers down and block the old fracture network so that you can create new fracture pathways. We call contacting new rock is how we describe that. So contacting new rock hasn't worked with these diverters consistently. And there's a number of technical reasons why we feel that that's a very tall order, a very challenging thing to ask of a solid form. So our diverter is an entirely new concept in diversion. It employs gas. And of course, gas and water carries the fibers. Water and gas have opposing properties. You know, one is very heavy or dense compared to the other. One has viscosity compared with the other, and viscosity controls friction, which we'll talk about in a minute. And of course, one is compressible gas, and one isn't. So these opposing properties under a pressure environment create an interesting dynamic. So if you pump gas and water in a fracture network, the gas, although lighter than water, will be a diverter. And here's why that happens. In a large crack, water will displace the gas because friction is not material in a wide crack. However, in a fine crack, friction begins to play a role. And because friction is controlled by viscosity and water has much greater viscosity than gas, it turns out that the gas will sneak by the water, occupy the finer fracture network, and thus divert the water, which is the fluid that breaks rock better. It will contact new rock. So it's a very simple, elegant solution.
Okay.
And I truly believe it'll be it'll transform the existing technologies.
No, thank you for that. That's very, very, very interesting. Very clear. I think now, if private investors haven't before fully understand it, they should do now. So thank you ever so much for that, Paul. Really appreciate that.
Well, Peter, we really appreciate the time that you allowed us to share the Highlands Natural Resources story.
No, you're more than welcome, Paul. And sorry, Robert. And I appreciate you coming back to us and giving us the opportunity to clear up a few things. And I'm hoping that when we publish this, that the audience that we have, the global audience that we have, will understand what it is that you guys are planning for 2017. 2018 and beyond that. I've just got one closing question, if I may, if you've still got time to proceed.
Absolutely.
Okay. So one of the questions has always been that Schlumberger obviously are, in essence, have sponsored the company and the technology. So, and I asked this question the last time, and what I raised was, given the fact the potential of this technology and the fact it could transform the industry per se, and given the small market cap of the company at present, what stops Schlumberger from saying, yes, we've seen technology works, and overnight just going, right, let's take these guys out of circulation?
I can say that they've been a very good partner to work with in advancing the technology. They have opened up their scientific divisions to work with us day in and day out. So no matter where this goes, it's truly been a pleasure working with Schlumberger.
Okay. So with regards to the DT Ultravert testing, then what sort of news flow are we expecting over the next 4 weeks, 2 months, the end? Can we say in this podcast that we should be expecting some news in July, August, so there's an anticipation from investors?
Let me be very clear on that. We have heard from Schlumberger that the test will absolutely happen by September. It could be earlier. It could be as early as July, but we've said that's the last part where they could happen. So we're hopeful it could be sooner, but September is where they will happen. Sometime in the month of September, they could happen July, but we're working with them on making sure that'll happen.
Well, I think that's a fantastic defined timeline to have for investors, and hopefully that will quell the volatility and expectations from some, and you can get back to a more ordered approach regarding the share price of H&R.
But anyway, so again, Peter, thank you so much for allowing us to share the story, and we hope to share updates with you and others as well.
You're most welcome, Paul. Robert and Collie, please come back to us, Robert, in the future. We want to hear more. We want to share your story and to get investors and get your story out to a wider audience. So thank you ever so much. It's much appreciated.
Okay.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
See you, Peter. Bye. Bye-bye.
Take care.